The country life in rural western Wisconsin can be great. Easy access to beautiful fields, woods, and water. But what about access to health care? Life in the country can be hard when you need emergency services or need regular treatment for a disease or simply need some home health care. Shortage of specialists can mean long car rides or untreated symptoms. Today on the West Side, we explore access to health care in rural western Wisconsin. And good morning. I'm Dean Kallenbeck. We're going to be joined today by Parker Shore. Parker is a reporter for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. Parker Shore, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Also joined today by Kelsey DeLander-Derrick. She's the Chief Executive Officer and Executive Director for Adderay Home Health and Hospice. And she's also a member of the Board of Directors for the Wisconsin Association for Home Health Care. Kelsey, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, our third guest is Allison Page. She's the Chief Executive Officer for Western Wisconsin Health in Baldwin. Allison Page, good to have you along.
Thanks for having me.
So as always, you're invited to add your perspective to the conversation, share your experience or observation about rural health care, or ask your questions on the topic. Number to call is 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. While I've told our audience where each of you work, I think it'll help for context for our conversation today if we have our two healthcare professionals talk a little bit more about their organization. So, Allison Page, we'll start with you. What is Western Wisconsin Health and who does it serve?
Western Wisconsin Health is a small, independent organization at Exit 19 off of I-94. We are a hospital, a clinic, a fitness center, and we offer a complete array of services to keep you healthy, but also services to take care of you if you have an emergency. We have a fully functioning 24/365, 7 days a week emergency department. Inpatient, surgery, everything that you need for medical care. But we also focus very heavily on health and wellness for the region.
And Western Wisconsin Health is a relatively new name, right?
Yes. We were Baldwin Area Medical Center for years. And in 2016, with the opening of our new facility, we became Western Wisconsin Health.
And you are based in Baldwin. And is that are all the facilities there in Baldwin then?
We have a branch clinic in Roberts, Wisconsin as well.
Very good. So let's move on to you, Kelsey DeLander-Derrick. You are the executive director of Adderay Home Health and Hospice. Tell us about that organization and its clientele.
Yes, so Adderay's been around for almost 25 years now. We're officed in Baldwin, but we serve a six-county service area that is quite large. So that includes Barron, Burnett, Dunn, Polk, St. Croix, and Pierce counties.
Very good. Let's shift now to speak with Parker Shore. And I want to spend a little time now with you, Parker, as we only have you for the first segment of our show today. You put together an in-depth article for Wisconsin Watch, also known as the Wisconsin Center of Investigative Journalism. The article was titled, "How Can Wisconsin's Rural Hospitals Keep Their Doors Open Amid a Wider Crisis?" Can you define for us what that wider crisis is all about?
Mm-hmm. Right, so it's a crisis of across the entire United States. It's a crisis of hospital closures, of hospitals being deep in debt and having to shut down units, and just people in rural areas not having access to hospitals, OB services, and things of that nature.
Now, while you wrote broadly about the issue, you illustrated your story with the tale of Memorial Medical Center in Neillsville, the only hospital that serves Clark County, and that's one of the largest counties in the state geographically, so pretty important facility. What challenges has that hospital faced in this decade that made it a good example for your story?
Well, on the first hand, they had a lot of debt. They lost $3 million 1 year, and they were really close to shutting down or significantly downsized, as lots of hospitals have across the nation. And so I wanted to explore why they were struggling in the first place, and then why today they're planning a new medical center, a $40 million medical center that they just broke ground on, how that was able to happen. And so on the first part, their payer mix was included a lot of government insurance. So that's Medicaid and Medicare, and that's pretty common to rural areas that are older and poorer. So if you're older, you're going to have more Medicare. And if you're poor, you're going to have more Medicaid. And that matters because government insurance pays not nearly as much as private insurance. In fact, it pays less than cost. Private insurance in Wisconsin pays something like three times what government or what Medicare pays. And so hospitals just cannot sustain themselves if they have too large of a chunk of Medicare and Medicaid patients and those that are uninsured. They had the highest uninsurance rate in Clark County, and that's attributable to poverty and a large Amish and Mennonite community that lacked insurance.
We're talking right now with Parker Shore, reporter for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, also known as Wisconsin Watch, about an article he recently wrote about the state of Wisconsin's rural hospitals amid a wider crisis. Despite these challenges that you talk about in your article, only one Wisconsin hospital has closed so far this decade. Some of our listeners were definitely affected by it. That hospital was Franciscan Skemp Medical Center in Arcadia, which closed back in 2011. What have people in that community and those in rural Buffalo and Trempealeau County who were served by that hospital, what have they done to replace those services that they lost?
Well, they do have clinics there, and so those can, they have a new clinic with Mayo that, you know, can do primary care stuff, but there really isn't a replacement for emergency services. The folks in that community still have to drive, and commonly do drive to La Crosse, which is an hour away to receive care. And actually recently, more recently, their pharmacy also closed when Shopko went out of business. So they really haven't replaced what they lost in that hospital. And that has affected the community's sense of safety, which is whether a person in that community believes that they could survive an emergency, a heart attack or something along those lines, but also maybe prevents people from wanting to move there. And, you know, impacts health. And that's mainly the pharmacy is what a doctor told me in the area.
You know, I was thinking about that, and you kind of touched on it there, is that, you know, maybe next to the school, I think healthcare facilities in a community in a rural area in western Wisconsin, probably, if not the largest employer, maybe the employer that provides jobs of, you know, significant income in many of these rural communities, especially ones that are focused on serving an agricultural community. Beyond access to health care, what other effects would a hospital closing or a hospital cutting back on services have on a community from an economic standpoint?
Right. These are rural hospitals are often considered anchor institutions, so they're not just centers of health care, obviously, but also centers of community, of jobs, of economic activity. So when a hospital closes in a rural area, it's often the top employer or top five. So you lose a lot of jobs, which hurts the economy. And like I said, people might not want to move to a rural area that lacks a hospital. So that's sort of a story that we see across Wisconsin, across the nation, of rural areas losing population. It hurts these areas when they lose people. The people left behind are older, poorer, sicker, and that's really at the heart of a lot of the hospital closures, is a shrinking rural America.
Allison Page, I want to bring you in for just a second, because Western Wisconsin Health in Baldwin, you know, did undergo a change. They built a new facility. As these conversations were happening, how much was the thought about the role of the hospital as a member of the community?
Very much so. It is absolutely a cornerstone in the community, and we like to think it's really redesigning, redeveloping the entrance into Baldwin, Wisconsin. But having that there makes it a better place for everybody, for businesses that want to locate there. And we really went about the business of defining what should a rural hospital look like? What should it include? What should our goals be? And came down to three things. Number one is we need to be there when you have an emergency. If you have a heart attack or you have a stroke, you need to be saved now. We need to be able to do that. We need to be able to manage all the way upstream to prevention, chronic disease. And we should be focused on health and wellness. So figuring out how to do that and balance the money around it is a whole nother deal.
Well,
but it's really those three things.
Yeah, exactly. And balancing the money was a big part of your report, Parker Shore, based on a 2017 report that's quoted in your article. One out of five rural hospitals in Wisconsin were operating in the red. What do the hospitals in danger of closing have in common?
they have in common the payer mix. So that's who pays the hospital. So that's the hospitals are based on a fee-for-service schedule. So for every vaccine, an arm, a broken arm fixed, they're paid a certain amount. So hospitals that are poor, that serve a poor and older population, are going to have those Medicaid and Medicare patients that pay significantly less than private insurance. And these areas have in common poverty, higher rates of poverty, more disadvantaged communities, and shrinking populations.
We've been using the term rural pretty broadly here, but not all rural parts of western Wisconsin were created equal. How much does the socioeconomic status of the community have to do with keeping that community's hospital open?
It has a huge role. It plays a huge role. You could have one community that has a small college that's thriving, and the hospital will be doing just fine, regardless of whether it's in an urban or rural area. And then you have another community not so far away that's much poorer, and the hospital is really going to struggle. So the socioeconomics is not just important for the health of the community, but also for the health of the hospital itself.
Again, inviting you as our listener to join the conversation, share your experiences about rural health care. How's your local hospital doing? Is it doing everything it used to do, and does it seem to be thriving? 800-228-5615 is the number for you to join the conversation, 800-228-5615. Parker Shore, most hospitals in our area have found ways to hang on, but another part of the crisis is access to specialists. What are some of the key specialties that have become less available to rural Wisconsinites?
I think the most prominent one is OB services, so whether the hospital delivers babies still. There's been some really good reporting around this showing that when you're about to have a baby, you might be traveling 30, 45 minutes to a hospital. But that's one service. There's lots of other services that, more urban hospitals will be providing, for instance, cardiology services. This is important not just for the access, but also for the way hospitals make money. Hospitals make a lot more money on specialist services. And as more and more of these are being shifted to urban hospitals, there's less and less money to go around for rural hospitals that offer primary care and outpatient services, but not as much specialist services as they used to do.
What's keeping these specialists away from the local hospitals? They just don't have the volume of patients that they need?
Right. That's one thing for sure. I think another one is these specialist doctors don't necessarily want to live and work in rural areas. They're paid better in urban areas. They have more amenities in urban areas. And unless you have a certain proclivity to living in a rural area, there's no reason really to move to a rural area and practice there, considering those factors. So it's all those factors combined.
Parker Shore, as we wrap up our time with you, I'd like to try answering the question that's the title of your article, or I'd like you to try answering it. How can Wisconsin's rural hospitals keep their doors open?
I think a reckoning with how hospitals are paid is a big part of it. Other states are doing interesting things around sort of a changing the fee-for-service model to adapt to the shifting nature of healthcare and the shifting nature of rural America. So in Pennsylvania, for instance, they're doing something new called global budgeting. So the hospital gets a lump sum every year, and they can spend it doing whatever they want. And if they're particularly good at preventative health, for instance, that keeps patients out of the hospital, a normal hospital would be endangered by those practices, despite them being good things that we want to have happen at hospitals. In Pennsylvania, these hospitals won't be punished for doing this sorts of care because their lump sum doesn't change from year to year. And that doesn't change for when the population is shrinking, and it doesn't pay for or it doesn't change for any other factor that might hit hospitals going forward.
If you'd like to read Parker Shore's story about rural hospitals and other stories in WisContext series on rural healthcare, I'd invite you to go to wiscontext.org. Wiscontext is a partnership of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television and the Wisconsin Center of Investigative Journalism, which is where Parker's from. But go to wiscontext.org and search rural health, and you'll see his article, several other articles that he's written, as well as other articles about rural health. That page pops up in the first link. So that, again, is wiscontext.org. Parker Short, glad to have some time with you this morning. Thanks a lot. Very interesting article.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So Parker leaves us, and we continue, though, to talk for the hour about access to health care in rural areas of western Wisconsin. Our remaining guests are Kelsey DeLander Derrick. She is the Chief Executive Officer and Executive Director of Attleray Health, Home Health and Hospice, and Allison Page, the Chief Executive Officer for Western Wisconsin Health in Baldwin. So what's your experience with health care access in rural western Wisconsin? You can join the conversation at 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back talking about access to rural health care in western Wisconsin. Our guests are Allison Page, the Chief Executive Officer of Western Wisconsin Health in Baldwin, and Kelsey DeLander Derrick, the Executive Director for Attleray Home Health and Hospice. Allison Page, you are the CEO of Western Wisconsin Health, which operates the hospital and the medical clinic in Baldwin. We heard Parker Shore tell us stories about rural hospitals in trouble. Has your organization felt those same challenges? And if so, how have you dealt with them?
Right. I would say 10 years ago, our hospital was very much in the same situation that Neillsville found itself in, with very low volumes, debt, not a lot of money coming in the door. And compared to Neillsville, though, we are different. We're not in a shrinking area. We're in a growing area. And we are not in an area that's heavily hit by poverty. However, it was really transforming it and reshaping the business to balance the business. In order to make a rural hospital work, you have to have enough surgery going on to help fund the other things where you lose money. So you balance it out that way, bringing in specialists that can do surgical procedures, but that also generates a lot of revenue. So you really look at where do you make money, where do you lose money, and how do you strike that balance, if you can make that happen.
Many hospitals in our area have partnered with larger organizations in order to continue serving the community. We've seen a number of hospitals that are now part of the Mayo and Marshfield systems that were once independent. How did Western Wisconsin Health decide to take the path it took?
Our board of directors decided about 10 years ago to remain independent. It was the feeling of the board at that time, and it remains now, that we can better identify and meet the needs of the community as an independent organization. There is no magic to joining a system or remaining independent. You still need to do the same work to make the business function well. And so we did that work. It's not to say we would never join a system, but right now we feel that the structure is really allowing us the flexibility to respond very rapidly to the needs of the community.
As an independent, does it make it more or less easy as you, let's say you have to refer a patient for a service you don't provide? Do you have some agreements with some of those larger providers, either in the Twin Cities or Eau Claire or wherever, to share those?
Yes, we do. We partner with organizations from Eau Claire to Minneapolis, almost all the large health systems we have relationships with, and we think that allows us even more flexibility. The benefits to being in a large system, then your payer contracts are managed by the large system. So generally, you might get better reimbursement for some of the from some of the insurance companies. And then more and more, we're seeing the large systems develop their own narrow networks, which could be a factor for us in the future if we're not a part of the networks. So, but we've had very good luck finding specialists to come to our facility.
St. Croix County is actually considered part of the Twin Cities metro area, and while there's no doubt that Baldwin and the surrounding area is certainly rural, do you think the proximity to the Twin Cities makes it more likely that your community can continue to financially support a local healthcare organization?
Absolutely. Yes, we have Baldwin and the surrounding area. A lot of people there work in the Twin Cities. Generally, there's very high employment in St. Croix County, and so we're able to support it.
The area of home health care has become more visible and a more visible part of the medical care scene as an alternative to clinic or hospital visits. Kelsey DeLander Derrick, what sorts of services do home health care organizations such as yours provide to its clients?
We provide a wide range of services, so it varies from whether it's a younger individual needing care in their home for infusion services to an elderly patient who may need assistance with a chronic condition or wound care.
And as you look at this, your organization serves a large area. You mentioned earlier 6 counties in total. What challenges does that cause compared to a company like yours that might be serving a more urban clientele?
It's challenging as an organization because we have to take into account drive time for our staff members, mileage involved, and so that also cuts into reimbursement received. And so factoring, trying to group together our patient population in one area as we're serving them.
So to be clear, is mileage and that sort of thing, is that not reimbursable then?
That is not. So we receive payment for the services provided, but that does not take into account the time it takes to get to that individual's house.
So where, if you were in an urban setting, a nurse might be able to visit maybe 6 or 7 patients in a day. How many do yours visit?
That is correct. So we will see anywhere from 3 to 4 patients in a day. And a lot of our competitors also see bigger success when they see patients in facilities, but we feel strongly that we see patients wherever they call home. And oftentimes with our patient population, that's in their houses.
Yeah, which may be in the country or even in a smaller community, whatever. How do you manage to cover an area that large just tactically, logistically? How do you do that?
We find a way to make it work because for us, really in expanding our service area to these 6 counties, it was based on the community's need. And so we're trying to fill that gap. And so we will hire folks that live in these more rural settings so that they can serve these patients. And that cuts down on our drive time as well.
Kelsey DeLander Derrick, you're on the board of directors of the Wisconsin Association for Home Health Care. That organization had people testify at a public hearing last month held by the State Senate Committee on Health and Human Services on a bill called it's Senate Bill 416. Can you talk a little bit about what that bill would do to improve home health care service?
Yes, so that bill is looking at our Medicaid reimbursement and increasing reimbursement by about 10%. And so that would have a big impact on home health, as most of our payers are Medicaid and Medicare. So that would help bridge that reimbursement gap.
When you say most, do you have a guess from a percentage standpoint, how many of them are paying through Medicaid?
Through Medicaid, I would say,
or through
Medicaid
support.
And Medicare yeah. combined would be about 95%
no
of
kidding.
Our payer mix.
That big?
Yes.
Wow. Wow, wow. Well, some counties used to provide home health care services as part of the county operations, but more and more are getting out of the business. Pierce County's Public Health Department ended its home care program. Dunn County plans to do the same by the end of the year. Both of these are in the same service area that you've been working on. How does your organization manage to stay vital when these county subsidized programs can't?
So we have a hospice program as well, and reimbursement is higher than our home health program. So we use that to balance out the reimbursement gap there. And then we also offer palliative care services. Those also aren't highly reimbursed, but it does help us balance.
We're talking about home health care. We're talking about hospitals. We're talking about all the access to medical that there is here in western Wisconsin, and particularly in the rural parts of western Wisconsin. How do people in rural areas get access to health care, and what are some of the challenges that are part of that? We'd love to have you join the conversation. 800-228-5615 is the number that you can call. That's 800-228-5615. We did hear earlier from Vern from Boyd. He couldn't stay on the line, but he wanted to comment on the fact that veterans in rural areas have difficulty accessing VA care, often due to transportation issues. And that whole area of transportation is an area that, of course, we've talked a little bit about it already, but it's an area that makes rural health care, I would think, difficult in many ways to manage. Allison Page, many of your clients have to find a way to get to your facilities in Baldwin from outside of town. For someone who doesn't feel well, who doesn't have a car, that can be a real obstacle. What efforts does Western Wisconsin Health take in getting patients in without having to resort to, say, an ambulance service.
Absolutely. In Baldwin, like many other small communities, there is no taxi service. There is no public transportation, no buses. And quite a while ago, I would say 8 or 9 years ago, we took this on. And we have two vans now, transport vans, and it's free. You can make a small donation if you would like to. If you're on the schedule, we'll come and pick you up and make sure you get home.
So it's actually part of your system.
Yep.
You've actually, because you saw the need, you put it in.
Yes, we do. And of course, again, it's in the collection of things that doesn't make money in the organization. And then also St. Croix County has services for people with special needs who have special types of wheelchairs and things like that that we can't accommodate. They can sometimes help out.
As you've observed other hospitals in the area, is that a common thing where the hospital or the health center itself puts together that sort of transportation, or are there other models out there that are being used where maybe the county picks up that sort of thing?
I think it's a combination. I know that several of the small hospitals in the area do have transport vans. Ours generally goes about 15 miles, but we'll go further than that if someone has a need and they're part of our community.
And Kelsey DeLander Derrick, we've talked about it a bit already, that transportation is a big part of your services. But in your case, it's not the client, but your nurses who have to be on the move. You obviously have to pay these people for the time that they're in the car. You have to pay them for their mileage. But that's not time that you can bill back out to whatever. You mentioned 95% of the clients are Medicare or Medicaid. So do you have to figure out limits, or how do you manage that to make things balance out?
So we do look at, if we're seeing a single patient in a very rural area, we may have to look at declining their admission onto our service. So unfortunately, those are times where we do have to balance that.
Yeah. I know some communities, and there are actually in some communities, there are ambulance services that provide some basic home care, maybe with a person trained in first responding kind of skills, bandage changes, things like that, to complement the work of the home health care nurses. Is that common, and does your organization collaborate with ambulance services, or are there others who provide that sort of care where it may not be on the level of nursing, but it might be able to provide something that family can't provide, for instance?
I believe Western Wisconsin Health has partnered with the ambulance services, but we have not. Most of ours are skilled nursing services, and right. So we bring them on and create a care plan to really get the patient back on their feet and living a healthy life.
Mm-hmm. Allison Page, talk about that a little bit, if
sure.
you will.
Sure. So Western Wisconsin Health, our emergency department, worked with the Baldwin Ambulance Service. So the Baldwin Ambulance Service is owned by the Village of Baldwin. Mm-hmm. And that's another nice example of community-focused collaboration with organizations that are owned and operated in the community. They sat down and they looked at, well, what kind of service do we really need here, and developed it. So they go out and do checks on people who are at home and ill, or maybe people with congestive heart failure or some chronic diseases.
Yeah, I know. Just to share a personal experience, my mother ended up banging her leg and it created a significant wound. She was on blood thinners and she ended up being in the nursing home for 2 months dealing with that. But since then, she's been home, and there have been multiple bandage changes, couple a day, that had to take place for a while. And what was nice is that we did the home health care organization came 3 days a week, but on those alternate days, it was the ambulance folks. And it was nice because you had a couple different people looking at what was going on, and they were very good at communicating. So, you know, from a home health standpoint, it took a lot of pressure off family members. But I'm curious about the role of family caregivers, especially in a home health setting. Depending on what the situation is, that can be an incredibly taxing situation. Is your organization, Kelsey DeLander Derrick, with working with home health care and even in the area of hospice, how much are you interacting with those family caregivers?
We are interacting with family on a daily basis. When a patient comes on to service, we look at the caregivers involved and making sure that we're keeping them in the loop on care plans and making sure that they're educated in providing care to the patient. And we see it as a care team, and those are just additional members of that team.
Our conversation today is about access to health care in rural areas. And our guests, the voice you just heard, Kelsey Delander Derrick, she's the Chief Executive Officer and Executive Director for Attaray Home Health and Hospice. She's also a member of the Board of Directors for the Wisconsin Association for Home Health Care. Also joining us for the remainder of the hour is Allison Page, the Chief Executive Officer for Western Wisconsin Health in Barron. Do you worry about traveling long distances to get the health care you need? Any other observations you would have on rural health care? Have you been a person who's experienced rural health care? Have you had difficulty getting the care you need? We'd like to hear from you. Still have time to bring you onto the show at 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach on the West Side, and this is the Ideas Network. We're back with our guests, Kelsey Delander Derrick. She's the Chief Executive Officer of Attaray Home Health and Hospice, and Allison Page, the Chief Executive Officer of Western Wisconsin Health in Baldwin. Our topic today is access to health care in rural parts of Wisconsin, especially here in Western Wisconsin. We established early in the program that certain areas of specialty in health care are hard to find in rural areas, and we actually did a show earlier this year about the shortage of mental health services in rural counties in western Wisconsin. Another specialty and shortage that Parker Shore earlier in our interview identified was obstetrics and gynecology. Now, Allison Page, Western Wisconsin Health is partnering with the University of Wisconsin for a rural residency program in the OBGYN specialty, which UW says is the first of its kind in the nation. Talk about that program and explain why Western Wisconsin Health decided to get involved.
Oh, we were very fortunate to get a phone call from the University of Wisconsin-Madison and said, would you be willing to participate in this? We have two OBGYNs who work at Western Wisconsin Health, and they are very, very focused on the future and very interested in educating the next generation of OBGYNs. The shortage of OBGYNs in rural areas, it's not like they were there and then they left. The shortage really resulted from the subspecialization of medicine. Family practitioners used to deliver babies, do the C-sections, even do some of the surgery. And family practice has changed, limiting that. So the standard has changed. So it's almost like you need to develop this new OBGYNs generally practiced in larger areas, in metro areas. And now we need to change that and adapt that education program to entice OBGYNs to practice in a rural area.
So are there incentives other than just the experience of coming to a community for several weeks and working with the local OBGYN physicians in that rural setting? Is there any incentive that those residents have beyond, once they go into practice to return to rural areas other than the experience?
There's the experience, and then the hospitals generally provide incentives. Most graduates of resident programs come out of those residency programs with quite a bit of debt. A lot of hospitals help the residents, and the Office of Rural Health in Wisconsin also helps residents pay that some of that debt off if they go to an area of need. So that can help. I think that the UW program has looked at people who are passionate about rural and then helped get them into this rural track. So the young lady who was just with us for 3 weeks as part of the residency program actually was just born just north of here.
Yeah, near Cumberland, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she knew the area.
She knew the area, and hopefully will return to the area. If not our organization, maybe one of the organizations in the area.
Yeah. Why has it happened that, my daughters were born, 28 to 33 years ago, and we use family practice physicians at that time. Why has this change happened that has removed that or made that less likely that a family practice doctor or a family practitioner would deliver a baby?
Well, I think there are people out there who maybe have more information on this than I do, more research on it, so I can
sure.
give you my perspective.
Yeah, that's what I'd ask.
Yeah, my perspective would be that things have changed in medicine, and people going into family practice have less of a desire and an ability to have that broad span of practice. Frankly, people who are coming out of medical school nowadays, men and women, want more life balance than perhaps family practitioners had in the 60s and the 70s. I'm the daughter of one of those broad-based family practitioners, and we pretty much never saw him. He was delivered half my high school class and was never home. But people aren't coming out of medical school wanting that kind of lifestyle any longer. And then you have the subspecialization where kind of, I don't want to say that the bar has been raised, but because family practitioners did a fine job delivering babies and still do. But the standard in the metro area is OBGYN services, that you have an obstetrician doing that. So I think those things have played into it.
I know some of these, and the ones that I fall back on that are most common in the area are Mayo and Marshfield, but some of the partnerships they have, the specialist may be based in Eau Claire, but that person might visit Barron once a month or might visit a different community. With being an independent organization like you are, do you have any sorts of partnerships like that where you share some specialties or a specialist might come to your community that isn't really based there?
Yes, we have multiple of those. Oh. We call them provider services agreements. So if you have a heart condition and you come to our family practice clinic, you will likely be recommended to see Dr. Marad. Dr. Marad is a cardiologist with United Heart and Vascular out of Alina, out of downtown St. Paul. But when you come, you'll get a bill from us. So we contract with the specialists. So the billing generally goes through us. You get one bill. But the specialists, if you have cancer, we have a partnership with Health Partners out of St. Paul around cancer care, and you'll see Dr. Randy Hurley for that. So we partner with almost everyone.
Yeah, so as opposed to just providing the services, you're also sort of the distribution center for those sorts of things. Interesting. Other than, we've talked about OBGYN, we've talked about mental health, we've talked about family practice. Are there other specialties that rural areas find it hard to provide?
Well, I think mental health, the one you mentioned, is very challenging for rural areas. Now, back to Parker's conversation, when he talked about it being a fee schedule, that hospitals are paid on a fee schedule. Well, yes, they are. But rural hospitals, if you have the designation of being a critical access hospital or a rural health clinic, then you are paid cost for Medicare patients on the hospital side. And on the clinic side, rural health clinic, you're paid cost for Medicare and Medicaid patients. So we've been able at Western Wisconsin Health to have develop quite a thriving behavioral health team, and we can take care of Medicaid patients and serve Medicaid patients there very well. We're reimbursed the cost of the care, and it's working very well for us.
Our topic is access to rural health care in Western Wisconsin. Our guest, the voice you just heard, Allison Page from Western Wisconsin Health in Baldwin. Also with us, Kelsey DeLander-Derrick of Attaray Home Health and Hospice, also based in Baldwin but serving a six-county area. You're invited to join the conversation. We still have a few minutes left where you could do that, 800-228-5615. We'd like to hear your experience with rural health care. Maybe you're a health care provider and have some other thoughts on some of the challenges of providing health care in a rural setting. 800-228-5615 is your number, 800-228-5615. Christina from Glenwood City is joining the program. Christina, welcome.
Hi there.
Hi.
Thank you. I just want you to know that I consider Western Wisconsin Health a community treasure. I go to the functional medicine program in Roberts. I belong to Western Wisconsin Health's excellent water program. My husband and I eat at the cafeteria on date night. The food is very delicious and affordable. They truly work to make maintaining health affordable. Western Wisconsin Health, they don't just talk the talk, they walk the walk. They really do. And I appreciate you, Allison. Thank you so much.
Allison, I think you need to hire Christina to do your commercials. Oh,
we should mention, thank you, Christina. We should also mention that you're not my sister.
Oh, no, I'm not. But I wouldn't mind. I think you do an excellent job.
Oh, and I really,
truly, truly see that you are making maintaining health affordable for us.
Christina,
I appreciate that.
Christina, thank you for your call. And that has to feel good to hear.
Well, and on her point, I would say we're a hospital and clinic and a fitness center, and we do offer functional medicine, which that's another program. But I think we've worked really hard to swim upstream to health, wellness, prevention. What are the things? If you look at what Wisconsin has going on as a state, we have the trifecta of poor health in obesity, addiction, and depression. And how are we preventing those things? How do we move upstream? So we're focused very keenly on that.
She mentioned water. What was that about?
We have a fitness center, and in the fitness center, we have a therapeutic pool.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like a giant, giant hot tub, and it's very good for arthritis, for movement, for mobility.
So when you were planning the facility, were you thinking you'd be a destination for date night?
Well, no, but we had an idea board of things that we wanted in our new facility. And one of the ideas was, what if we had really good food and it was really cheap? And that's what we did. We have really good food. We only serve good food. We don't serve bad food. We were the first hospital in the state to completely remove soda from the building. Mm. We don't sell it. We don't serve it. So, you just imagine it first and then make it happen.
Kelsey Delander-Derrick, much of the stress that we've talked about on rural health care providers is the ability of clients to pay. Now, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is coming up on its 10th anniversary of passage next spring. Have home health care and hospice providers like yours seen fewer clients who don't have the ability to pay during that period of time?
We typically do see patients that don't have the ability to pay. I don't think we've seen an increase, so to speak, just because most of our patient mix is Medicare and Medicaid patients.
So they're not using ACA. They're in that safety net earlier than that.
Correct.
Okay. Allison Page, I'll ask you the same question. How has the ACA affected your clinic and hospital?
Right. We St. Croix County has traditionally had a pretty low uninsured rate. Our uninsured rate is practically zero. So it has definitely helped. Most people have health insurance. And we are, again, moving upstream on that front to help people who don't have health insurance figure out how to get it.
Kelsey Delander-Derrick, you and I talked last week a little bit in advance of this, and one of the things you mentioned was that it's hard to get registered nurses to participate in home health care, not because they don't want to. That mm-hmm. might actually be something they prefer, but because of the reimbursement opportunities that we've already touched on. Do you see that changing, and would that Senate bill that's in place that would increase Medicaid payments by 10% per patient, do you think that would be enough to kind of tip that over the edge and get more RNs interested?
It certainly helps, and it moves the dial forward. However, because we are located so close to the Twin Cities, we have to compete with Twin Cities wages. So we keep that in mind, but also making sure that we're paying a competitive wage so that the folks that we employ, that they can live a good life.
We're talking about rural health care, and again, still a chance to get you in if you'd like to join the call, 800-228-5615. Allison Page, the past few years have seen changes in the choices for dealing with end-of-life care, with fewer choosing to deal with those final days in a hospital setting than I think was traditional back when I was young. How does that impact hospitals, these end-of-life type decisions?
Well, I think that's the very reason that we have a strong relationship with Attaray. We are actually, Western Wisconsin Health is 85% owner of Attaray, and we partner very closely with them. They provide tremendous service at end of life. We had talked for a few years about potentially opening a hospice house, and Attaray was leading the charge on that. And the decision was made last year to not do that, and it was for the exact reason that at end of life, people want to be in their homes. Attaray makes that possible for people. People don't want to die in a hospital generally.
Yeah.
Either.
So Kelsey Delander-Derrick, this is what you do. You're mm-hmm. part of hospice. Talk about the increased popularity of hospice care and what some of those choices are within your organization.
Sure. So we offer palliative care and hospice care. So for folks who aren't ready to stop seeking curative treatments, palliative care is a perfect fit because it helps manage pain and different symptoms they may be experiencing. And then when they are ready to transition onto hospice, we're able to help support them in their homes and really support the family members and caregivers that are also involved in their care.
It might be interesting, too, to point out the research is showing that that in hindsight, the mistake that most people make is not getting into hospice soon enough. Mm. People should get into hospice sooner than they are. So for those who are out there listening, if you have a need for hospice care, call sooner, not later.
And is that main advantage to get better pain treatment, or what would be the advantage?
So an earlier election of hospice benefits is a better control of pain and symptom management, and research actually shows that patients who start hospice treatment earlier tend to live longer than those who wait. And hospice really is focused on living rather than the misconception that hospice is only for those who are dying.
Talk about that aspect, if you would, a little bit. I mean, what do you mean by that?
So my personal experience, and I think a lot of folks find this, I was drawn to home health and hospice care after my experience with my grandmother, and our family found that, large family, eight aunts and uncles, 40-plus cousins, that it was still difficult to provide the care that my grandmother needed. And by bringing in hospice, we were really able to control the symptoms so that she could focus on checking off items on her bucket list rather than just trying to keep that pain at bay.
Not to build on Garrison Keillor's stereotypes, but a lot of rural folks I grew up around were stoic Scandinavian types that fit the Lake Wobegon bachelor farmer description. I know both of you are Western Wisconsin natives as well. Kelsey, is there something about rural people in Western Wisconsin that makes them less likely to seek medical services because, yeah, it's just not in their personality to do it?
My own personal opinion would be yes. We think that we can do it on our own that we have to. And absolutely not is that the case. By bringing hospice in earlier, we can help them live fuller lives.
Allison Page, do rural medical providers like yours make any special efforts to get these independent types to come in and take care of their medical problems so they can get early treatment?
Yes. We try to reach people on the front of health and wellness. And so it was a treat for me one day. I was in our atrium and a woman came up to me and she looked lost. So I reached out to see if I could help her find something. And she said, I come to your fitness center and I've had lunch here, but I didn't know you had doctors here too.
That's interesting.
I thought, well, isn't that fun? We try to really reach out to people on the health and wellness, the relationships, and then work them into, you should have your physical once a year and get a checkup, and you should have these kinds of screenings. So it just becomes all part of one big package.
I'd like to ask each of you as we wrap up here today to look into the future a bit. Parker Shore's article talks kind of about the past 10 years. What does the next 10 years of medical care in rural Wisconsin look like? And Kelsey DeLander-Derrick, maybe I'll start with you. Home health care, hospice, those areas have grown, we know, in the last few years. Where do you see your business going in the next 10, 15 years?
Mm-hmm. So hospice has really grown and continues to grow. Home health right now, with seeing some of the different counties closing their home health programs, I see that as an area of opportunity. I think once we get through this reimbursement hump, we'll be able to see additional opportunity to expand home health services and make our communities healthier and then help with the transitions from home health to palliative care to hospice care and really this full scope of services.
And Allison Page, obviously, we've talked already about the visioning work that your organization did as it tried to set it up for the future. So having done that, what does the future look like?
So 10 years from now, we're living in a world where a rural health facility looks much like what we built at Exit 19, with an emergency department, acute medical care, and health and wellness services, along with management of chronic disease. But the future, if you have to follow the money. And what has to change here is how healthcare is reimbursed. So right now, if critical access hospitals were really built to take care of Medicare patients, people over 65, and they're cost-based reimbursed for that, what if they were cost-based reimbursed for community health and wellness services that would really help the community be healthier? When you think of a child born today in Wisconsin is three times more likely to be obese than a child born in the 50s or 60s like I was. Over half of the adult population in Wisconsin is obese, 47%, just under half. And what's that going to lead to in terms of disease management in the future? So things need to change. We think we're developing the model, but I would like to see the reimbursement mechanisms change, and 10 years from now, I think they will.
Allison Page, thank you for joining us. Allison Page, Chief Executive Officer of Western Wisconsin Health in Baldwin. Good to have you along.
Thank you.
And also joining us, Kelsey DeLander-Derrick. She is the Chief Executive Officer and Executive Director for Attaray Home Health and Hospice. Kelsey, thank you.
Thank you.
We were joined earlier by Parker Shore with the Wisconsin Center of Investigative Journalism. If you'd like to read Parker's story about rural hospitals and other stories in WisConText series on rural healthcare, go to wisconText.org, search rural health, series pops up on the first link. Thanks to Catherine Thomas and Kate Spranger for their help with this show. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.